Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts as they share with you the insider's guide to property investing.
Okay, welcome folks. You're back on the Property Couch, your insider's guide to property investing. It's Bryce Holdaway and Ben Kingsley here, mate. How are you?
G'day, mate. How you going?
Good. It's a good week. Yep. AFL's back.
Oh, I love it.
AFL's back.
Pies win.
Pies had a win, Fremantle had a win. We're both very, very happy. But this week, we're celebrating a very, very quick run to 1,000 downloads on our podcast. So that is a significant milestone. So thanks to our listeners.
Big call out to all our listeners. Thanks very much. And, you know, don't keep us a secret. Keep letting everyone know about what we're about.
Yeah, well, the mission before we started this, we got together and we talked about the fact that how can we provide good quality, free information out into the marketplace where people can come and learn more about property investing without it costing them anything. So this is the mission of this podcast here, and hopefully we're achieving that. But today, we are going to talk about our very first question that we've got from one of our listeners, and we're going to unpack it a little bit. And I think it's a really good one, because it's Matt who sent in a question regarding buying a home. What do you guys think of studio slash one-bedroom apartments in the city as an investment property? So, Ben, we've only got 20 minutes, and this is probably a discussion we can have for hours. So I think it's about squeezing it in and getting the headline here.
So where do we start? Well, the first thing we want to talk about is understanding the differences between what a studio and a one-bedroom might be. Like, for those who are very new to investing and very new to floor plan structures, what we class as a studio in most cases is where the bedroom might actually be in the living zone. Mm. So it's not a separate room as such. And valuers are the ones who are going to determine basically the future prospects and valuations of these particular types of properties. And what actually happens with it is they look for a couple of things of definition between studio and actual standard one-bedroom apartments. And usually if they've got a kitchenette or they've got their bed in the living zone, that's the classic studio accommodation. Mm. And often that's the type of accommodation that we talk about for student accommodation as well. So, and then the other critical thing, Bryce, as you're about to allude to, is the size of the actual, you know, layout.
Yeah, look, I think the answer is there's no one size fits all answer to this because in general, I agree with you, the studio actually by nature is under 50 square meters generally. And when you're building a portfolio of properties, you actually don't want to buy any assets that are going to give you glass ceilings. And by that I mean the asset has performed well in terms of its relative performance, but a valuer or a bank comes along and says, look, it's too much risk to us, therefore we'll give it a higher risk rating and therefore we won't let you lend against that asset as much as something that's, say, over 50 square meters. So in my view, studio apartments, student accommodation, anything that's really lends more to being an investor investor appeal more so than owner-occupier appeal, I tend to personally shy away from. But I guess that sort of the one-bedroom apartment argument to me has many, many ways that you can go down, because are we talking about new or established? Are we talking about less than 50 square meters or greater than 50 square meters? And are we talking in the 1 kilometre radius of a major CBD or the 1 to, say, 5 kilometre radius of a major CBD? And to me, the answer to those depends on where it is, depends on what my answer to be is, whether or not it's a good asset or not.
Yeah, so let's explore that a bit further. And one of the things in the Australian property market, excuse me, I've got a little bit of a tickle in the throat, but one of the things in the Australian market is traditionally our banks and our valuers have been shy around this square meterage. Now, if we were to plonk ourselves in Hong Kong, Shanghai, and areas where there's huge density and a scarcity of land, a one-bedroom, and I've even seen two-bedroom apartments, Bryce, in Hong Kong, where the square meterage is sub 50. So we need to understand. And so what they have is they have literally a little they have a standing room kitchen. So the standing room kitchen, you literally walk into it and it's two hot plates and then it's got the exhaust fan and your kitchen, your cupboards are around you and you've got a microwave and that's it. A couple of cupboards underneath, but that's just the, and then you go into the actual bathroom and it's very like a little modular bathroom. So literally as you step out the shower, you can't have two doors open at the same time. And then your living zone is of reasonable size. By that, I mean it can hold a couch and then it's got a little TV. And then your bedrooms, your main bedroom is usually big enough for a queen, but your second bedroom is actually a pull-down bed. Mm. So they are very resourceful. And through Europe, there's a bit of that as well. Now, what we're going to see happen in the Australian market is we'll see more and more acceptance towards, as our density grows and people choose to live closer to the city because of their lifestyle and convenience, we'll see a bit of that changing. And in the, you know, the 10 or so years that I've been, well, actually, what, 12, 13 years now, I've been doing mortgages, we've actually seen a bit of acceptance around, you know, one-bedroom apartments that are less than 50 square metres. In some cases, banks are quite comfortable around 40 square metres. But I will add this, that there are postcode areas that the banks aren't thrilled about. Mm. And those postcode areas that the banks aren't thrilled about are high-density areas. Yeah. So when you get, coming back to the story of even a studio apartment, there are studio apartments in areas like Paran, there are studio apartments, if we move around Australia,
Darlinghurst,
Fortitude Valley. So there's a bit of that accommodation there. So the banks are looking at the density. In other words, is it medium or high density? So is there a big number of them? And are they specialised accommodation? So in what we talk about student accommodation, that's real specialised accommodation. And I think we can talk more about some of the other specialisations. So it comes back to this point. If the banks aren't willing to lend carte blanche to all borrowers and have open lending policies, well, automatically, you're dampening your demand.
That's the glass ceiling that I was talking about.
Exactly. So they dampen this demand, and by dampening that demand, ultimately, you don't have a driving force of people who want to buy those assets. So traditionally, a studio or student accommodation actually delivers pretty good yield.
Mm.
I mean, you know, you only need to look around Carlton and you're seeing yields of 6 and 7%. But I can tell you, because we've got some clients who have come to us after buying these assets and saying, look what we've bought, and we go, you know, we take a gulp. And then we say, so how long have you held the asset for? And they say, oh, about 6 years. And I say, has it gone up in value?
No.
Zero.
Yeah, agreed.
So you are foregoing a growth story if you're looking at studio or student accommodation.
Yeah.
As opposed to one bedders. Well, there is definitely a trend, and it's in terms of people's wants and desires, a lot of people want to live by themselves.
Well, I was about to say lone households are the fastest growing household type in Australia, which is a bit of a, it's an interesting one because we're getting a bit lonelier, but the fact that people do want to live on their own, so they want amenities, they want security, they want to be close to lifestyle. I remember reading the book called The Big Shift by Bernard Salt, who's
good man,
a huge smart demographer bloke in this country for KPMG, and he's written a number of books since. But in that book there, it was back in the, I think it was the late 90s or early 2000s, I first read it. And he talked about a couple of things. One is Australia doesn't necessarily have that Manhattanization that some of the cities that you talked about before, like New York. Whereas if we, on a public holiday, we head to the bush, we go to the sea, we go to the countryside instead of moving into the city. So I think that's a good backdrop to talk about for Australians, because despite the fact that, and I'm not saying this is always going to be the case, given that our cultural identity is changing, but typically speaking, the Australian culture is space, country, bush, and if they get a choice, they'd want to see nature rather than concrete. And so for that reason, I think that inner city within the 1 kilometre radius of a major capital city in this country has two issues. One, I don't think Australians love that lifestyle yet in enough mass.
No.
And I think secondly, there's no restriction on supply.
Correct. No scarcity.
So they can continue to build these skyscrapers. We've seen in West Melbourne, for example, they've just put a lot of, and it's actually reasonably wonderful amenities. There's beautiful parks nearby. You've got public, but they've just built more apartments and it's put a lot on the marketplace. So in my view, one-bedroom apartments used to be built by the developer in the corner in the shade just to fill up some space. I think you're finding developers now who are actually actively building developments with one-bedroom, good amenity, one-bedroom apartments in mind, because they know there's a demand for it. And I think it's also good to know that, I say this all the time, we've been traveling around the country with the CPA, and I say this in the talk every time, that the great Australian dream has typically been for a baby boomer, you know, the quarter acre block, With a detached house surrounded by a garden with a hill hoist and a barbecue. But that's not always going to be the case because Gen X probably don't buy into the one-bedroom apartment as much as Gen Y. But here's the deal. In 2020, and as you know, 2020 is the first time that baby boomers won't be the dominant workforce player because they'll be retiring and moving to the next stage. So yeah. Whilst it's important to understand what baby boomers want, it's also important to understand what Gen X and Gen Y want. So to answer this question from Matt, what do you guys think of studio apartments? In my view, I don't think they make for a great property investment. When it comes to one-bedroom apartments, I think there are select one-bedroom apartments that do make for a great investment. So, and that probably leads into a new versus established conversation.
Well, it's horses for courses, isn't it? And I think you'll also see that there is a shift also in developer stock. I was reading recently that a lot of developers are now running the ruler over 3-bedroom and 4-bedroom condos.
Yep.
So people are saying, well, you know, because there is certainly a mass shortage of 3- and 4-bedroom houses closer to the city. So in relative terms, if I've got to pay $2 million for that 4-bedroom house close to town, what about a three plus study or 3+ study nook in a high rise where I still have the 2 car spaces and I can potentially put the boat out on the, you know, out at Altona as I go and take it down to the beach. So those are the types of things that we're definitely going to see. So we're seeing, one, people are time poor, so in life generally, and we're having, you know, more personalized conversations and stronger friendships with less amount of people.
Mm.
We don't, you know, we just don't have enough time anymore because life moves too quickly, we work too hard. This is the, you know, executive professional we're talking about. So,
when we catch up, isn't it? We're mates, and this is the only time we get to catch up.
Look, I do enjoy catching up. I'm starting to really get into these podcasts.
I actually look forward to this part of the week.
So what we're talking about there is saying, okay, there's definitely a trend to people in terms of density. We want less, especially in apartment style. I mean, you know, ultimately once we pair up and we want to have the white picket fence and the 2 kids and all those types of things, well, there's always going to be that underlying demand, and that's why, you know, housing stock close to town is always going to do great. But you mentioned the points before, and let's recap on them. There's no scarcity value in air. So, you know, they can always continually build up into the sky. So you'll always have times in locations where there's medium and high density where you'll have an oversupply.
Yep.
And sometimes that supply will then be absorbed. And then that will see developers then say, okay, are we ready to put more in there? But, you know, I think I flagged it in one of the podcasts earlier that Flagstaff Gardens are here in Melbourne, which is in the sort of bottom end of town on the fringe of the city. That's going to have an oversupply of apartments. So I'd be steering clear of the one-bedders in those particular things. So I'd be still going for city fringe one-bedders within walking distance to all your great amenities. So great walk score.
Yeah.
And then you're going to see a really good opportunity. And that sort of led me into what I wanted to, you know, have a yarn about to finish off today's podcast. And that is around non-standard accommodation for investment purposes. Now, we'll go into this in another way. So mainstream property, in other words, property that the banks are really happy to lend against, which is your traditional houses, units, villas, townhouses, those types of things, great. But when we start talking about student accommodation, when we start talking about holiday letting, when we start talking about serviced apartments, that's when you start to get cloudy in terms of, so for those of you listening, you're thinking, you know, these people are telling me great things about the fact that I can buy this holiday let or I can buy this serviced apartment and, you know, there's a management team that are going to come in and we're going to get all this great occupancy. And so the challenge with that type of asset is it's specialized lending. And so again, we talk about not getting that broad demand of everyone who wants to buy into it. It's very specialised. So,
and it kind of leads into the fact that people are looking for a really easy solution, aren't they? If they can buy something where it's looked after, it's in a holiday pool, and I can, but it's not like that. If you need to have it like a set and forget strategy for building the portfolio, but you don't want to just outsource the whole lot to make it easy. You actually want to invest for fundamentals, not because it. Not,
too right.
Because you're in a slipstream.
This is an investment, guys, and I've seen so many people go on holidays and come back to me and throw a brochure across my desk and say, Ben, can you analyse this investment opportunity? And I can say, yeah, really quickly. I mean, you know, it's been built in a tourism zone that's, you know, subject to change. It's subject to potentially poor management and marketing and wear and tear because you've got a lot of turnover of people coming through, you know, those types of things. So on average, I mean, interestingly enough, I had one recently with a client and we actually agreed to go with it. He did some excellent due diligence and I followed that up and this one stacked up. But if there's 5,000 or 10,000 of these opportunities around Australia, I reckon that's the first one I've done in 5 years where I said that one stacks up. Mm. So the client executed on that, and that was down in Geelong. Mm. But in reality, it's a classic case of I've seen so many of these investments, and this is, remember, guys, we're investors. We're not here. We don't have to have a love affair with it. Mm. This is a passive investment where we bought these, and these things just underperform, and there's constant need for, you know, the management team come back or they sack one management team and the next management or hotel management team come in. And the first thing they say is, oh, we want to refit the rooms and modernize the rooms. So can we have $25,000 off each of you for a new, you know, sort of furniture package? Mm. And so you're sitting back going, this thing's just taking my money. Mm. You know, there's no return on it. And you're limited in capital growth.
Because that's a good point, because a lot of people buy these, you know, these properties that have all these amenities. A, as the investor, you're paying for them but not getting the use of them. And the bigger these blocks get, quite often I've noticed that a lot of the tenants, because it lacks that intimacy within the community environment, they don't use them either. So quite often they can go being unused. So
they get seduced, don't they?
It's a glossy brochure.
But they also get you, especially the holiday letting ones. It's like, oh, and I can holiday there for four weeks of the year.
Yeah.
Ah, right. So hence, I'm trying to kill two birds with one stone, making that classic mistake of, keep your personal activities separate from your investment activities. You don't have to kill two birds with one stone. Let's separate them out. If you want to go on holiday there, let's buy a cracking investment property. And with the profits that we make from that, you can holiday on the beach. You know, that doesn't bother us.
Because it's kind of like, I'd really love a boat. Well, how are you going to use it 3 weeks a year? Because rent someone else's for 3 weeks and don't upkeep it for the other 49.
Exactly. You know, so go and get one of those partial ownership structures as opposed to dropping, you know, 120 grand on a boat.
So let's wrap up a few things because we're getting close to 20 minutes. So there's a difference between investment grade and investment stock.
Oh, yeah.
And we are going to talk about that in a podcast in the future because there's so much gold in that. So and in terms of new versus established, Ben, it's no secret. If anyone listens to our podcast, listens to any of our materials, reads any of the articles that we're quoted in, we're very strongly in the established camp.
Let's clarify that in terms of, we're happy to buy something that's brand new or relatively new as long as it's not something that's in a major development or a big. So, and that's just historical resale values gives us confidence around the product. So,
but we also that's think, a story for we also think that you're paying a premium if you're buying new as well. So, yeah. I guess, Matt, if we go back to your original question, it was, what do you guys think of studio one-bedroom apartments in the city as an investment? For the last 20 minutes, we probably talked maybe shy away from studios, but there's a whole world of opportunity within the one-bedroom apartment space. I mean, it used to be Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. It's now Jack and Jill went down the lift to fetch a baby Chino. Life's changing. The great Australian dream is no longer that quarter-acre block in suburbia. People have different goals and aspirations. As Ben said before, they're even considering 3 and 4 bedroom apartments closer in the city so people can afford and still get these amenities. So generally speaking, avoid properties that have investor only appeal and look for properties that have owner occupier appeal as well. So any closing thoughts, Ben?
Oh, look, I think you've wrapped it up well there, Bryce. I'd also just add, if I wanted to be super conservative, steer clear of medium and high density stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because that's usually, if there's a planning capabilities to build that, well, usually next door, you know, there's surprises in 2 years' time when someone comes in and says, we're going to build another 1,600 apartments of similar stock. So all of a sudden, you know, you don't have that scarcity that we talked about before.
There you have it, folks. Give you an idea on what we think about studio and one-bedroom apartments. Please keep the questions coming through. Thanks, Matt, for that one today. We've got a couple of others that we'll talk about in upcoming episodes. And if you want to go to thepropertycouch.com.au and leave us some feedback and let us know what questions you'd like us to talk about, we'd be very happy to do that. We can also follow us on Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Instagram. And if you get a chance to go
follow us in a car.
You can follow us anywhere.
On a train.
On a train. You can follow us wherever you want to. But, yeah, so if you could go to either iTunes or you could go to the Android store and leave us some star ratings whilst Ben sort of mocks from the sidelines there.
Oh, I'm going to have a bit of fun.
That'd be great because we were recently featured in the new and noteworthy section on the podcast store, which is really great. So, Ben, it's been fun. 20 minutes flies. I thought we might even be able to sneak two questions, but no such luck. We probably only just rounded off one.
Not with us.
So, until next week.
I really do.
See you, folks.